This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
If Florida State,
we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
Jameis, why? Jameis, no! No! No!
This is the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today on the podcast, we're going to be joined by Mike McAllister of CuseNation.com, our scout opposite over at the Syracuse site. And we're going to be talking about this upcoming game against Florida State for Syracuse. Syracuse for Florida State, obviously. And apparently there's been quite a bit of drama in Syracuse, New York over the last few days. Mike, why don't you catch us up to speed here?
Yeah, Coach McDonald today spoke to the media for the first time since he was demoted over the weekend from offensive coordinator to wide receivers coach. The quarterback's coach, Tim Lester, is now going to be running the offense. And today, Tuesday, was the first time that McDonald has had a chance to speak with the media since the news came out. I believe it came out on Monday, but the actual decision was made over the weekend on Saturday, overnight into Sunday morning. George McDonald said today that his quote was, quote, "I wasn't happy. I felt like I was blindsided. If I had known that I was only had 18 games to be the offensive coordinator, I would have stayed at the University of Arkansas. I never would have come here." So you can tell, obviously, there's a lot of tension there. He's clearly not happy at all with the way that things went down. And that's going to provide an extra dynamic, as if Syracuse needed yet another obstacle and something else in their way when they face Florida State with that huge talent gap between the two schools. Syracuse now seemingly has something else to deal with in addition to trying to pull off a stunning upset against a clearly superior Florida State team.
Yeah, well, that sounds fun.
Yeah,
sounds like that staff is very together. They're all, the ship is sailing in the same direction, you know, one rudder, one voice, kind of situation.
I mean, the funny thing is, Jason, that, when this staff was hired, they were all friends and all guys that had worked together at previous stops. You know, McDonald and Coach Schaefer had worked together at two different places at Northern Illinois and at Western Michigan. Coach Shaver has worked with several other of his assistants at different places when he was at Stanford, you know, with, I think Coach Bulla worked with him either there or one of his stops in the Midwest as well. He worked with Coach Lee, the linebackers coach, at a different place as well. And so these are all guys that have worked together. These are all guys that have previous experience with each other. They're friends off the field. And so for this to happen, and McDonald said that this situation did change the dynamic in their relationship. And so, but he did say that, you know, his relationship with Coach Lester, the new offensive coordinator, is very strong. Those two are very close friends. They remain very close friends. And that his goal now is to work as hard as he can to try to help McDonald be successful, or to help Lester be successful as the offensive coordinator. So, you know, he says the right things in one sense, but in the other, you can tell that there's clearly some deep-rooted feelings there. He clearly feels hurt. It's going to be a very interesting dynamic. But, you know, the rest of the staff seems okay. Everyone else seemed to be pretty positive and upbeat. The coaches the same, or the players the same way, seem to be okay. And the players, I spoke with freshman wide receiver Steve Ishmael as well, and he said, you know, Coach McDonald has been the same old guy to them, that he's been coaching them very, very hard and focusing obviously all of his attention now on the wide receivers, but they haven't noticed a difference in him as far as his attitude and how he interacts with them. So from that perspective, it's good, but obviously whenever you have a rift like this, it's never a good thing.
Yeah, and the question is really, this is one of the things that always comes up when you have a coordinator shift, is how much really can change by having a different guy call the plays or a different guy coordinate the offense. That's something that, you know, once you get through camp, once you get into the season, there's only so much you can do. And that's a little surprising to me to see this kind of change in, you know, midstream. And normally is an indicator that there's more to the story, but it just seems like here, with as much as he was blindsided, as much as all this goes, it just seems very puzzling to me.
it's very puzzling in that sense, in that you generally don't see that in the middle of a season, like you said. It's also perplexing because of the relationships that these coaches had off the field coming into them all sort of congregating at Syracuse, you know, on the coaching staff. So from that perspective, I completely agree. How much can actually change? You know, if you look at strictly the football perspective of it, the entire system itself, I think with the playbook itself, is going to remain largely intact. I don't know how you can really change an entire system in 1 week without, you know, even an extra week as a bye to prepare, without anything like that. You've now got new quarterbacks, so you don't want to throw a new playbook at them in addition to them now having to adjust to getting playing time when before, you know, they were basically relegated to watching Terrell Hunt on the sideline for the most part. So you're not going to see necessarily a different playbook. What you might see is a difference in how plays are called. McDonald from game to game, you know, they tried to run a lot of bubble screens, and they did run the ball a little bit. They run some design runs for Terrell Hunt, but it sounded like from Lester with some of his media opportunities today and in a local radio show he was on, in ESPN Radio in Syracuse, he wants to establish the run first, and it sounded maybe more of a traditional power run type of a scheme, that they have elements of that within their playbook, but maybe utilizing that a little bit more, utilizing some play action off of that to set up the pass as opposed to trying to be a quick pass first type of an offense. And part of that might be because of the quarterback issue, but I think you're going to see some noticeable differences in how Lester calls things as opposed to McDonald. Lester might try to be a little bit more aggressive, especially with some downfield throws. And against Florida State, maybe you'll see a couple of trick plays thrown out there to try to catch him off guard. But
that's something that Florida State is used to seeing by now.
Right, I'm sure. I mean, you almost have to go into a game with a couple of quote-unquote surprises in order to try to catch him off guard. But Syracuse broke out one. They had a double reverse pass that they actually ran twice in a row and got touchdown on the first one, but then it was called back on a penalty. And the second one, the wide receiver dropped it, even though he's wide open in the end zone. So
yeah, I saw that one on the not top tens.
For Ben Lewis, the receiver. You know, someone has a drop like that, but
I mean, it's a terrible thing. And actually, the thing that people don't realize is that a lot of times those are some of the toughest catches, because it's sort of like the way that I can explain this as an ex receiver is, it's sort of like what happens when people get on camera and they suddenly don't know what to do with their hands. You know, if you've ever been on camera, if you've ever, you know, started public speaking and you're not used to that environment, and all of a sudden you realize, like, oh my gosh, I have hands. Like, what am I going to do with my hands? Like, that happens. And in that environment with that kind of a wide open catch, that's actually sort of what happens, is it's like, oh my gosh, how should I, like, I want to make sure I catch this. Like, how should I catch it? Should I catch it with my hands? Should I let it to my body? And then it's on you and you just hope you get it. And the hard part is to just be as casual and to just do it automatically in the same way that you would if there was somebody there. And it's one of those things where if there's somebody there, he's just going to put his hands up and catch it. It's just, you know, something he does every day. But all of a sudden you're that open and the ball's there. And it's, like I said, it's all of a sudden you realize that you have hands and you realize that you have to catch it. And that extra process of thinking about it removes you from the what needs to be an automatic process for you to do it successfully. The other thing is actually balls that are right at the shoulder pad plates are actually the hardest balls to catch for a lot of receivers, because it's in between where you'd put your hands sort of with the fingers facing down versus the fingers facing up in a V or in a, like a diamond or a triangle kind of arrangement. If it's, you know, up around the eyes, if it's down, you know, below the shoulder pad plates, you put your hands, you know, where your fingers are down. If it's right at the plate, it's actually difficult to get the hands just right. And so the tendency is to let it get to the pads, which is precisely what happened there. And then, you know, once that happens, a lot of times the eye comes off of it, it hits the pads and it bounces. And I felt terrible for him, but you know, I know exactly what was going through his head right at the moment that ball was coming.
Yeah. I mean, too much time to think about it, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. But anyhow, so getting back, I mean, looking at one other thing that's probably of interest to Florida State folks is that George McDonald actually was also on Al Golden's staff at the University of Miami. He was a wide receivers coach there before he was wide receivers coach and then passing game coordinator actually in 2012 actually. And then after that he left to join Brett Bielema at Arkansas. And he's the guy, as far as I understand, on the Syracuse staff who's responsible for recruiting South Florida, and he's had some success there. So this is the sort of move, again, just on the recruiting side that could be interesting, I think, for Syracuse moving forward. I don't know if you have any thoughts about that.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting because they have over the past year or so tried to have Tim Lester a little bit more involved in the Florida recruiting, which is kind of ironic with the way this has played out. But I think it was done for two reasons. One, with the thought of, I kind of always thought that McDonald took the offensive coordinator job here with the thought of if he performs well down the road, he could either turn that into a head coaching gig somewhere or an offensive coordinator job at, you know, one of the premier programs, whether it's, you know, the Miamis or the Florida States or the Floridas or, you know, another SEC type of a school. I think that was kind of sort of the career path he thought was going to come with taking this job here after he spent, you know, 4 or 5, maybe 6 years with some of his friends being the offense coordinator and helping to turn around a program. So when Lester started helping down in Florida, it's ironic now that he could end up being the Florida guy. So the good news for Syracuse is they do have someone that has a little bit of experience down there. He's obviously not George McDonald. The relationships that McDonald has are unbelievable. Yeah,
and in Miami recruiting, relationships are everything. It's more true there than anywhere else.
Yes, and the good thing about – now, Schaefer has some down there as well, but McDonald was clearly the guy with the most connections down there, and to the point where if Syracuse got – late in the recruiting cycle and they said, okay, crap, we need a linebacker, he could call some guys and say, hey, I need a linebacker who can play Division I football, you know, maybe who's under the radar, who people aren't really looking at or who doesn't have any offers, and they'll find him somebody. You know, that happens. And Syracuse had that happen a little bit with a Richie Desir, who sort of came in late in the process, with Darrell Eskridge, who was originally being recruited as a wide receiver, but Syracuse didn't have room for him as a wide receiver, and so his coach moved him to the defensive side of the ball for a couple of games. They sent Syracuse some tape on him as a safety prospect, and Syracuse said, okay, we'll take him. They offered him, and they got him to commit, and now he's going to end up being an NFL draft pick as a safety. So that obviously was, you know, before McDonald's time, but those are the type of things that McDonald can do because of the connections he has down there. And even the second tier guys in Florida are good enough to play major Division I college football, and some of them develop and end up being some of the better players from the area. So not being able to continue that pipeline or having to adjust that pipeline from a recruiting perspective is not a good thing. And I think you can sort of see the writing is on the wall that he could be on his way out after this year. And not because Syracuse would fire him, but because he would leave after being demoted.
Right. Yeah. I after hearing those comments, I can't imagine that he would still be on the staff next year. But, you know, actually, there's been stranger things when you get into the coaching business. It's very strange what bedfellows you actually see together sometimes. And so, you know, it's not the sort of thing where I would expect him to be there, but I've seen stranger things in this business before. But at any rate, let's get to talking about the game a little bit. What are you expecting about this game, you know, coming from the Syracuse side? I've heard from, you know, some other folks on the Syracuse side that I don't know that I've heard this level of negativity toward a program that's actually more or less been on the rise the last couple of years. Yeah. But it just seems like the last couple of weeks, the level of negativity has just really risen. And then, you know, it's sort of come to the head with this particular drama that's been going on this week. But what are you expecting? Where is Syracuse as a program coming into this game?
Well, devoid of the drama with the demotion and then with absent the Terrell Hunt injury, what I was expecting before the season was that Syracuse would beat Maryland and then split Louisville and Notre Dame. That was kind of my expectations to get them off to a good start. When they lost Maryland, it seemed like they kind of started – pressing a little bit, and it was more because of self-inflicted wounds rather than because the offense as a whole was failing or whatever. But it just came to a head against Louisville, where the offense was so bad. Not only were they not scoring points, but they weren't racking up yards. There were curious play calls where they had a second down inside their own one after Louisville had a very nice punt, and they ran a toss play out of a shotgun with their slowest running back. There were a lot of fans that were not happy with the way McDonald was calling games. I was not one of those people that was really critical of his play calling, because I think ripping on play calling can be a little bit overblown. Every single play that's designed is designed to work if it's executed properly. That's kind of the stance I usually take. But there were a couple of curious calls in there. But I thought overall as a whole, the offense was making strides. They just didn't have the playmakers on the outside. And I thought their best players were their youngest players. So coming into
the game. That's usually a good thing when you're rebuilding.
Right. Exactly. Completely correct. So I thought there was still some high hopes for the future of the offense. I wasn't ready to give up on McDonald as an offensive coordinator. So where the program I thought would be coming into this game is, a very hyped game in Central New York with the defending national champions and defending Heisman Trophy winner coming in. The first time they've ever played against the defending Heisman Trophy winner in program history. So that's big. The stadium was going to be packed, and I thought Syracuse would hang around for a quarter and a half, and then Florida State would pull away and ultimately win pretty comfortably because they were just so much more talented. But I thought Syracuse could ride some emotion early, and Florida State this season has struggled a little bit from the get-go in some games. I thought Syracuse might be able to take advantage of that. Like you saw against North Carolina State, not sure it would have been quite that bad from Florida State perspective, but so that was kind of what I was expecting. Now you've got no Terrell Hunt. You've got the offensive coordinator issue and all the drama surrounding that. Now I think Syracuse would be consider themselves a win if they were able to hang around with Florida State for a quarter. I think you'll get a good effort from the players. There's a lot of Florida kids on this team, and so a game against Florida State's going to mean a lot to them. Darrell Eskridge, who I talked about earlier, Steve Ishmael, who I talked about earlier, Richie Desir, as I mentioned, several other players from South Florida that really are going to, they know a lot of the guys on the Florida State team. They're friends with them. Families know each other, and when you're not recruited by one of the Florida Big Three schools and you have a chance to play against them, you want to put your best out there. The Syracuse players and the coaching staff knows that as bad as the season has been, an upset win over Florida State would almost turn all of that negativity around. But I think they're also realistic in knowing what type of a task it is. Right now, you expect Syracuse to lose and go to 2-4. You still expect them to beat Wake Forest because Wake is terrible.
Abysmal.
And even with a backup quarterback, Syracuse still has more talent on the roster.
There's not going to be a whole lot of offense in that Wake Forest game.
No, Syracuse might win 6-3, but even still, or 4-2, where safeties rule the world. But you look at the next week where they go play at Death Valley against Clemson, they're not going to win that game. And then you look at the last several games, and you've got North Carolina State and Duke coming to the Dome, and you've got road games against Pittsburgh and Boston College. And to get to a bowl game at that point, you would have to win 4 of your last 5 games, and that would be really tough. You'd have to win all 4. You'd have to win 3 of the last 4 games, and that would be really tough, but not an impossible task. And if you could, with a backup quarterback, get to 5-7 even, show some promise with one of the young quarterbacks, have some young guys start to come on and finish the season a little bit strong after starting 3-5, I think that would give some hope going into next season. It wouldn't be a total step backwards for the program. Recruiting had been picking up coming into this season. There was a lot of momentum as they got a ton of early 2015 commits that now they're going to have to really work hard to hang on to. So the program had a lot of momentum and had some chances to win one of those early games and continue that momentum, and it's completely gone off the rails. So right now as a program, Syracuse is trying to not go back into where they were under Greg Robinson, continue some forward momentum, and just try to somehow save this season so it's not a complete disaster.
Yeah, and looking at this season, I actually felt like everything really turned around on that 88-yard interception return late in the second quarter against Maryland. I felt like that so far has been the turning point for this season at Syracuse, because I mean, looking at the stats in that game, if you just covered up the score, you'd be shocked that Syracuse lost that game, let alone lost by two scores. I mean, when I was watching that game, I felt like Syracuse was actually the better team.
Yes, I agree.
And you know, when I mean, to my eye, and then looking at the total at the stats here, and I just pulled them up. You know, 589 total yards Syracuse had, and scored 20 points.
Yep.
You got 600 yards, and you average 7.8 yards per pass attempt, 7.3 yards per rush attempt, and score 20 points. I mean, that's like you said, that's hard to do. That's
right.
Difficult. That's a difficult feat to achieve. Whereas Maryland, on the other hand, had only 369 yards, so they had 220 fewer yards. Yep. Averaged 2.8 yards per rush. Had 89 total rushing yards on 32 attempts. And all of a sudden, they score 34 points on that, and they win by two scores. Now, those two turnovers are really the reason why, along with a long pass and a busted coverage. But I felt like that turnover, which was at the end of the half, Syracuse was going in, was likely going to score there, and it was 24-13 at that time. Suddenly, it's, you know, that puts it at 24-20 going into the half. That's a very, very winnable game. You know, Syracuse has been outplaying Maryland to that point, but you know, you're still only a score down. You come out, you do your job, but instead it's 31-13, and I felt like that team folded a little bit in that second half.
Yeah, I mean, when it was 31-13, before that it was 24-13. Syracuse is driving to try to get back into it. When it went to 31-13, that really sucked the wind out of the sails. And like you said, the defense came to play in the second half. They held Maryland only 3 points. If you take away the 7 points that they scored on that pick six that really turned it around, they only gave up 27 for the game. And you know, the Syracuse defense held up pretty well in that game. They actually dropped 4 or 5 interceptions that they should have had. They really only gave up 2 or 3 big plays that really hurt them. But offensively, they were moving the ball at will. They ran the ball all over Maryland. They threw the ball well against Maryland. They just, every single time they would get basically inside the 30, they hurt themselves with penalties, with poor play execution, with you know, an array of different things, with the interception. The big key on the interception, Terrell Hunt got the play call from the sideline and didn't get the last bit of the play call. And the play call that he got was that his intended receiver, Adrian Fleming, was supposed to run a quick little out, which he did. But the end of the play call, which he didn't hear because he turned away, was that he was supposed to fake the out and turn up for a slant. And that was because they were expecting a zone coverage from Maryland, which they got the zone coverage. And when you watch the replay over again, if Hunt makes the correct throw, Adrian Fleming catches the ball and at
scores.
A minimum,
he scores.
Is tackled inside the 5.
No, he scores on that play.
Right, exactly. There was no one there. So, but instead, because he didn't hear the end of the play call, Hunt throws the out, and Will Likely is just sitting there waiting for the ball, catches it and runs, and there's no one there.
Yeah, that's the difficulty, unfortunately, with a lot of the complex offensive signals that everybody
yep.
has. I mean, that happens. I mean, that actually happened last year. Jameis Winston's one interception against Clemson last year was on a crossed-up signal where he got half of it, and you know, he thought it was going to be a smash route, and it was supposed to be a shake route where you fake to the smash and go fake to the corner, and you go inside on a little seam. And he threw the smash. He threw the corner, threw it straight to the safety. And you know, it's the thing. It's the hidden things like that a lot of people don't realize. And the thing with Syracuse is that, you know, they have enough talent to be competitive with your Maryland's and with a lot of these teams on their
yep.
schedule, but they don't have enough talent to overcome. This is something Jimbo Fisher actually talked about with regard to just in general teams and Florida State particularly in his Monday press conference this week, is that teams that have elite playmakers can afford to get away with more. So, you know, you can have your, you know, procedure penalty or something like that end up 1st and 15 or 2nd and 15 and get it back because you've got elite guys. I mean, when you've got a Kelvin Benjamin on your roster, well, okay, it's 1st and 15. We'll just dial up the 15-yard penalty. We'll dial up the 15-yard play. I mean,
right.
that's what exactly. you can do. And Syracuse right now doesn't have one of those guys. They don't have one. And so what that means is you have to be that much better each each individual play has to be better, has to be executed perfectly, because if you get behind schedule, if you get off leverage, you're really going to struggle.
Yeah, and that's been the big thing for Syracuse is, like you said, they have enough talent to compete with the Marylands and even with the Louisvilles. I mean, their defense against Louisville was very good, and they got after Reggie Bonifon, their redshirt or their true freshman quarterback. They really put a lot of pressure on him. Syracuse loves to blitz, and their defense has kept them in every single game. And if their offense was even average, they are in that game against Notre Dame to the end. And Notre Dame's a top 10 team, a legitimate top 10 team. They're very good.
Yeah, I think that Notre Dame team actually is better than the 2012 team that played for the title, for what it's worth.
I agree, actually. I think they're more balanced and their defense is stronger, and they'd be able to better match up with an SEC school. I still don't think they'd win. I still think Florida State's going to beat them in a couple of weeks. But I Syracuse was in that game against Notre Dame throughout, and because their defense forced five turnovers against a team that hadn't turned the ball over all year. And their defense played very, very well. They gave their offense multiple opportunities. They just couldn't capitalize on them, and that's sort of been the theme. That has really caused George McDonald to be under so much fire, and why so many fans have been upset with the offense production or lack thereof, because they've had so many opportunities, and because fans look at the defense and say, you know, hey, we're ready to compete with a lot of these teams if we could just get the offense to be even average. And it hasn't been that, and that's been where a lot of the fan frustration has been, and it sort of boiled over against Louisville. And but you could see some progress, and the lack of big-time playmakers on the outside certainly contributes to that. And some of the play calling has been a little curious at times, but you saw a lot of progress even through the Notre Dame game. But against Louisville, it just took such a major step backwards. Obviously, Coach Schaefer thought he needed to make a move. I'm not sure it was in the best decision, he thinks it's in the best interest of the program long term. I'm not so sure it is. But, you know, we'll see the rest of the season how well Coach Lester, see if he can get things turned around a little bit.
Yeah, and it sounds to me, again, what you said is earlier is that we can expect probably a little bit more power focus, a little bit more emphasis on running the football.
Yep.
So that immediately gets me wondering how well Syracuse is going to match up front. That's really, if you're going to run the football, you better be able to block. I mean, it's true if you're going to pass it too, but it's all the more true if you're going to have any success trying to run on first and second down. You need to be able to block the opposing front and create seams. How's Syracuse going to match up in that case with a team like Florida State?
Well, this is the interesting thing, Jason, is because coming into the season, a lot of people thought the offensive line was going to be a strength. They were good last year. They weren't great. You know, they had trouble against fronts like Florida State, who was so dominant up front defensively and had so many good players along that front seven and still do. But against basically everyone else Syracuse played, their offensive line was pretty good. They got blown out by Clemson, but that was because the defense couldn't handle, you know, Sammy Watkins, Martavius Bryant, and Taj Boyd all in the same offense. That was more of a not being able to handle the speed on the outside, as opposed to their offense handling things up front. They limited the Clemson pass rush, didn't really give up any sacks in that game, but they only lost one player from that offensive line from last year, and that was center Mackie McPherson, who was a good player but was not a great player, and they replaced him with John Miller, who got a ton of rave reviews during training camp. And so everyone thought, you know, the line is going to be good. They've had some younger guys that were providing depth that were, you know, coming up and were ready to maybe replace those guys in a year or so. So you felt like they had some depth and they had all those guys returning and ready to take that next step. They've got a left tackle, Sean Hickey, who's going to be an NFL draft pick somewhere in the top three rounds come May, I think, is when the draft is going to be. So you had a lot of potential up front, and Syracuse has been good at opening up holes, really good against, you know, teams that don't have stellar defensive fronts. Like you mentioned earlier against Maryland, they ran for almost 400 yards against Maryland, and that was because their offensive line was just blowing them off the ball.
And they did average 4.5 yards a carry against Notre Dame as well, which is good.
I didn't think they ran it enough against Notre Dame. Now, you're not going to average 5, 6, 7 yards a carry against Notre Dame, but they got to a point where for some reason they thought that passing the ball was going to be their best option. I thought their best option was to try to keep Everett Golson off the field, run the ball a little bit more, and I think you'll see them get to that. Their offensive line is good enough that they can run the ball even against good defensive fronts well enough that they should not be completely abandoning it. So you're going to, I think, see them when their first possession. It'll be interesting to see how the coin toss goes, because if I'm Syracuse, I try to get the ball first to try to get some momentum on your side if you can, because you don't want to give the ball to Jameis Winston, have him go right down the field, score a touchdown, and then the whole crowd is out of it and, you know, the air gets sucked out of the building and all the buzz is gone. If you can get the ball first, try to move the ball a little bit. Even if it just ends up in a field goal or you flip field position, but you move the ball a little bit, get some confidence, you know, you can maybe get the crowd on your side a little bit. But I think you'll see Syracuse's first possession, regardless of how that plays out, you'll see them start to run the ball. Prince Tyson Gully's going to get some more touches. The guy that I like the best of their running backs is actually their true freshman, Irvin Phillips from West Haven, Connecticut. He's been really good. He just hasn't gotten a ton of touches, but he's really dynamic between the tackles. He makes these little cuts and does them at full speed and is very elusive and slippery, even though he's a bit smaller. He's a guy whose upside I really like. But they're going to run out there 4 or 5 running backs. Adonis Amin Moore is their power back. You're going to see him probably featured a little bit more because they might be running some more power stuff. But Syracuse has enough running backs. They have the guys up front that they can run the ball a little bit on Florida State. Not to say they're going to, you know, do what they did against Maryland, but enough that they could be reasonably successful and not have to completely abandon it. And with a big question mark at the quarterback position, that's going to be a huge key for them. So I think they'll try to do that, especially early, to take some pressure off their quarterback and feature some of those running backs that they have, which I think is their deepest unit on offense.
Yeah, and it's an interesting matchup from my perspective at that point, because Florida State has, where they've had the most trouble this year so far has been precisely in that area. I mean, they still have an elite secondary. You know, their corners have been fighting through some injuries so far this year. PJ Williams and Ronald Darby both have fought through some hamstring trouble. Darby actually had an ankle, he rolled an ankle as well. So, you know, they've had some stuff there. They both sat out the second game, for example. But the real issue has been up front and basically being consistent in stopping the run, particularly on the edges. That's where they've had the most trouble. They've also had a lot of injuries at the defensive tackle position. Niall Lawrence Stamples out for the year. He was the starter at nose tackle. You've got his replacement, Derek Mitchell, is limited right now with a knee injury sustained against against NC State. Actually, one of the injuries that Dave Doran was accusing Florida State of faking, and it's remarkable how committed to faking injuries Florida State has been through this whole process. But he's been limited. And then Eddie Goldman, who is one of the top defensive tackles in the country, should be a first round draft pick whenever he leaves. He had an ankle issue against the Citadel in the second week, had to come back and really fight through that against Clemson, which is a game he played really well in. But you also have another defensive tackle, so the third nose tackle, Justin Shanks, also has had some injury trouble and missed a game and a half. There, so you're going to see a lot actually of a true freshman, Derek Naughty, at nose tackle in this game. You're going to see some guys that weren't necessarily going to be getting quite as many reps as they are at this point at those spots, but they've actually been pretty reasonable in there. The real issue has been on the outside opposite Mario Edwards Jr., who's been sliding inside a little bit more. The defensive end, sort of defensive end outside linebacker hybrid position that Florida State's been playing with sophomores Chris Casher and DeMarcus Walker has been a problem. They've not been real consistent in setting the edge. They've not been. They're both guys that they look like Tarzan. They should play like Tarzan, but they seem to disappear for stretches, for long stretches on the field, and they don't make a whole lot of plays. So what Florida State's actually done is they've brought in a true freshman who's only about 225, 230 pounds. He's 6'7", about 230. So, you know, he's not a real heavy kid and very lean, but they've got him coming in off the edge. He actually earned the start this last week. That's Lorenzo Featherston. He actually reminds me a lot of, if you remember back, a Florida player, defensive end, years ago, Javon Kearse, reminds me a lot of a player like that, where he's sort of lean, but extremely explosive, very long, gets off the ball well, but he's still a true freshman and still a little light. And so, you know, you may be able to run at him. He's not as consistent necessarily in being where he needs to be all the time. He gets a little over aggressive at times as a freshman like that is wont to do. So the question to me is how Florida State is going to do stopping the run. I mean, if I were in this game and I had the Syracuse lineup, what I would try to do is pound them all game.
Yep.
And see if I could run on the edges, see if I could get some space to shorten this game, to try to, you know, get 3 yards a carry and maybe pop one for four and get a first down, you know, and continue to extend the game that way, or to shorten the game that way, and see where I can go with that. It'll be interesting to see how well Florida State does against that. One thing that's happened is Florida State has gotten back one of their best linebackers. He looked awfully rusty last week, but he's sort of rounding back into shape. That's Marcus Aligwe. We'll see how that changes things. It'll be interesting. I think that's the matchup to watch. I think from the Florida State perspective, I mean, I don't expect Florida State to lose this game, but from the Florida State perspective, if you're looking at this game for what to expect moving forward, I think that's the thing that can be telling, and sort of what to expect sort of when Notre Dame comes to town, what to expect, you know, moving forward on the schedule, is can they stop the run when I think Syracuse is going to come in and pound, and I think the Florida State defensive staff is going to expect that. So that's, to me, the really interesting matchup here, and I think moving forward for Syracuse, I think that's the same question, because – you know, Pittsburgh last week against Virginia showed that they can get pounded. So Pitt being on that schedule, Duke is not especially strong up front. So, you know, Duke can potentially get pounded. NC State has a terrible defense, although their quarterback and their offense are pretty good. So moving forward to that last four games of the schedule, I think this is telling for Syracuse on whether or not they're going to have, you know, the ability to round out, maybe win five games, maybe even get to six. That's going to be the thing that's going to determine it for them, I think, especially with Hunt hurt. So that's the matchup I'm really interested in seeing in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. And to the larger point of down the stretch of Syracuse's schedule, I thought that part of their offensive issue is that they've sort of lacked an identity. They couldn't figure out whether they wanted to be a spread, throw the ball over the field type of a team, or whether they wanted to be a run focused team. And the move to having Lester be the guy maybe will help them with that focus, because it sounds like he's going to rely more on the running game. And given their personnel, I think that's a perfect scenario for what they should be, what they maybe should have been. We saw flashes of that against Maryland with how well they ran the ball. And I think that's what they have to do going into this game. When you look at it from the macro, it's obviously good long-term, like you said, given who they have coming up on their schedule and trying to find that identity. But when you look at it from a micro perspective, just into this game and how they can try to stay in the game, keep it somewhat close heading into the fourth quarter, and then try to make a play, which is what they would have to do to pull off this monumental upset. Their best play is having Jameis Winston on the sideline. And that's what, you know, you do that to protect your secondary, which has been vulnerable to the big play this year. You do that to keep an offense that has been one of the best in the nation, especially at putting up points, off the field. And then you try to wear down the Florida State front, and you give your team some momentum. And the crowd, the longer Syracuse is within 7 to 10 points, continues to stay in it. And then it puts some pressure on Florida State, and that can start to snowball itself a little bit in Syracuse's favor. And I think the only way they do that is if they run the power, power eye formations, fullback, the two tight ends, the larger sets, the things like that, and then run some play action off of it when you get into like a second and five, maybe. You run a play action and try to hit a guy for 15, 20 yards after you've run the ball five or six times in a row. That's what Syracuse has to be able to do if they have any hope of trying to not make this embarrassing, keep it close, and try to keep the crowd engaged to some extent. That's going to be such a pivotal matchup, like you said, not only for this game, but for both teams going forward and where they hope to get. Syracuse trying to get to that 6-win mark, and Florida State trying to repeat as national champions. And Florida State's going to play much better run offenses than Syracuse's down the road. And, you know, Notre Dame's, as you mentioned, as Duke Johnson coming up on the schedule, we know how good he is. And then, you know, getting to the playoff, you're going to be playing teams that can run the ball. And, you know, maybe you play in Oregon with their explosive offense, or
I think Florida State would be very happy to play Oregon's offensive line. I think they're much more worried. They're much more worried about your Auburns and your Alabamas and some of these teams that can match up athlete for athlete a little bit better up front. But
even the Mississippi States with
absolutely
the way they played offense.
No, Mississippi State, I think, is as physical and as good on both sides of the ball in terms of the up front as anybody.
They're fun to watch.
Yeah, they're. They've made a little bit of a monster up front there, and it's a fun team to watch without a doubt. Last thing here, one of the things that stuck out to me in the Syracuse stats and in watching that game, and also against Notre Dame, but I'm specifically going to bring this into the Syracuse bit. They ran for 370 rushing yards, but Terrell Hunt had 156 and was averaging 6.8 per carry. He was the leading rusher on the game. He's obviously out for the foreseeable future for Clemson. He's out for this. I'm sorry, for Syracuse. I see orange. so for Syracuse, that being such a big part of the rushing offense. What I wonder then is, how much does that mean we see true freshman A.J. Long in this game as opposed to Austin Wilson? Or are we going to see really more of a focus on I formation power, power stuff from the tailback? Or should we expect more of this dual threat kind of option, some spread option type stuff in order to create the running game there? What do you expect there?
Well, it's funny because Scott Schaefer has hinted it during his teleconference and during, there's always a video where they interview Coach Schaefer that gets posted on Monday on the Syracuse Athletics website, where they sort of recap the previous game and preview the next one. And obviously the big topic was the George McDonald situation and then the quarterback situation. And both Tim Lester, the new offensive coordinator, and Coach Schaefer have strongly hinted at using more than one quarterback on Saturday against Florida State. So I think you'll see both. If it was up to me, I would be throwing A.J. Long out there, especially if you think that Terrell Hunt is going to be on the closer to the 6-week than the 4-week range. The longer Terrell Hunt is out, I think getting true freshman in there, getting him some experience, seeing what he can do. He's been running the scout team against the Syracuse's first team defense for the last several weeks, and the first team defense continues to rave about how good he is and how much he gives them problems with his legs and with his ability to make plays. And Coach Schaefer calls him, if you're playing a pickup football game, he's the guy you want on your team because he just runs around and makes plays. It's almost like a Johnny Manziel type of a formula as far as the way he's going to play. So if it was up to me, I would throw A.J. Long out there, see what he can do, just because given the issues that they have offensively, anytime you have a guy that can be more of a playmaker and the guy that's going to have the ball in his hands most often can be a playmaker, I think that's what you want. Whereas an Austin Wilson is going to be the stationary traditional pocket passer guy, I think either way you're going to see Syracuse run the power offense. It's just a matter of, do they throw a couple option looks in there? Do they throw a little bit of zone read in there? If they want to do those type of things, you're going to see A.J. Long. And when they get maybe into third and longs or they get into a 2-minute offense, maybe you see an Austin Wilson because of his ability to be a little bit more accurate in those short intermediate passes. The other guy to keep in mind is Mitch Kimble, who's a third quarterback who isn't getting as much discussion, but he's sort of a combination between the two, where Austin Wilson is the best passer, A.J. Long is the best scrambler, and Mitch Kimble can do a little bit of both. He's a guy who's extremely athletic. He's the biggest of the three. He's 6'4". A.J. Long is right around 6 feet, but I think he's actually a little smaller than that, despite what he's listed at. Austin Wilson's about 6'2". So, you know, you can see the different sizes in there as well. It's entirely possible you see all three quarterbacks, depending on how the game goes, to try to throw them all out there and get some experience and see if you can catch lightning in a bottle, depending on how the game goes. But I think to start, you'll probably see Austin Wilson come out there and start, but it'll probably be him and AJ Long as the two primary guys, but they'll both get some reps in the game on Saturday.
All right. Well, thank you, Mike. Again, my guest has been Mike McAllister from QsNation.com. I really appreciate you joining us for this week's preview. I look forward also to seeing you in the box on Saturday. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah, anytime. And the press box is a great view of the whole field, so you'll enjoy it.
Okay, that's it for us. On behalf of the whole Noll Digest crew, and this time also QsNation.com, I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. Thanks for joining us. I made this.